Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You've tuned in to episode 613 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. This week, we're taking a jaunt through some short topics in the world of amateur radio, Linux, and open source. But before we get into that, we'd like to let you know who we are. For our silent key, Russ, K5TUX, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD, and yes, welcome back, everyone. We're excited to be back here at the, you know, the mid-level right past tax day, you know, because everybody had to probably file this week, if you haven't already. I fortunately finished mine, so I'm happy to be done, and I was not late, so that's good. So it's a good weekend. You know, tomorrow, I guess, is a special day for some folks that like to partake in certain activities. So that's when this podcast will be released. Yeah. And before too long, it'll be May the 4th be with you. So, you know,
yes, that'll be cool. That's very true.
So why don't we go ahead and go around the horn here and see what we've been up to this week, and then we'll get right into our topic. So, Cheryl, why don't you start us off?
All righty then. Well, this week, since we've kind of categorized this out, in food, I've been in a cooking slump, but I did fix some pineapple chicken with some stir-fried mushrooms and roasted broccoli and some mushroom chicken that included some leftover mushrooms with a wine cream sauce and grilled asparagus. My Raspberry Pi woes, I hope they're finally fixed. I basically had a meltdown on Bill a few nights ago. Anyway, yeah, he was busy and he was like, just buy a wireless keyboard and a mouse and get this over with. So I got one Raspberry Pi was working fine. You know, it was giving me no problems, but the second one was giving me fits. So I got the keyboard, I got the mouse, and hook them up and got the second one fixed and went back to the first one, and then it wouldn't work. So I was like, all right, you people are killing me. So I basically spent the better part of a day bouncing between two Raspberry Pis, beating on them thoroughly, and they were working Saturday night. Nice. They are probably not working now because they did burp like halfway through the poker game, and somebody actually mentioned, apparently I missed it at Russ's birthday poker game in December. Apparently he had issues with the one that was giving me horrible fits.
Nice.
And they're like, oh, we think Russ laid a wired mouse on top of the TV. I was like, oh, of course he did, where I wouldn't think to look or reach up. And somebody spelunked around and found the wired mouse. And they're like, yeah, he couldn't get it to run right. So he had to go get a wired mouse out of his office. I was like, of course. Yeah, great. Whatever. So, but yeah, at least I know what to do now in order to get them to cooperate with me. So that's great. And I now have a basket that has the wired keyboard and a wired mouse and a flashlight in it, because you never know when you might need it. So,
well, yeah, that's the thing with those Bluetooth mice and keyboard combos, even though they can switch between multiple devices, you know, sometimes the crap doesn't work.
Well, I honestly think, because the wireless worked fine on Raspberry Pi number one, the first time around, you know, no problems at all. But it wouldn't work with the other one. And it was like everything had just completely locked up, because I couldn't get anything to work, you know, using it, even though I was on the right setting, you know, keyboard number two or whatever. So yeah, and it was once I woke the Raspberry Pi up, I guess, then I could use the wireless. Interesting. But the wireless would not not activate it after it had sat for a
while. Oh, it wouldn't wake it up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's a combination of issues there. It's not necessarily the Bluetooth problem. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, I was able to, like, you know, hit the mouse and wake it up and then sit back down and use the wireless keyboard and stuff. And I'm like, all right, whatever. Yeah. So, but yeah.
It's a power saving setting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's outside of the realm of the actual connectivity issue.
Right. Yeah.
It's a setting in the Pi and the OS to not allow the thing to go that far to sleep, you know, to go completely dormant.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, that was always fun, but
nice.
Yeah. So I haven't done anything on the radio because I've not been in Russ's office for more than about 2 seconds all week. And last night, I hosted our monthly poker game, which was the second one that I've had since Russ has died. So that was challenging. But our poker playing friends have been amazing to make sure that everybody never forgets Russ. So even if they did give me grief over my issues with Raspberry Pi and MAME last night. So, but yeah, it's okay. So.
And you got the big concert coming up, too.
So yeah, and we got a concert coming up this next weekend. So,
yeah,
it's been an interesting experience. So, and I got more stuff done off of my honey-do list or whatever today. So, yeah, it's just luckily, you know, I've got the dog fence done and, you know, wiring for deep freezes to move. So they'll be in a building that I can actually access now.
Sweet.
So, yeah. And got the light switch in the guest bedroom fixed so it will stay off.
Oh, so, yeah, it was acting up. Yeah.
Sticking
so, and like not wanting to go off. It's kind of weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all been fixed. So we're just, you know, moving right along around here. So, and yeah, we're, nice. And I actually, things are getting done quicker than they would have gotten done if Russ was here.
Yeah.
Since Russ procrastinated on everything, including getting the podcast uploaded.
And sometimes including recording the podcast, period. I'm too busy.
Yeah, there's that one. Yeah.
Too busy.
Yeah, there's football on. I don't want to do it tonight.
Yeah. The Chiefs are playing. You can't watch.
Yeah, exactly.
I might be crying because they're going to lose. Awesome. Well, I'll quickly round up mine because there's not much really going on. I mean, there's tons of stuff going on, but yeah, that's not very exciting for the rest of the people. So food, I didn't really do anything special with food this month or this week just because, crazy busy with meetings all week long. Had a board meeting on, committee meetings on Tuesday, board meetings on Thursday, conference calls on Wednesday. Yeah, it's just crazy. I don't even know how I survive every week. Computer stuff. I did bite the bullet. Hopefully you can't tell, but like I'm running on Omarchi on this particular system that I'm recording on right now. So I totally wiped my podcasting desktop. And I'm running Omarchi on it because I'm just a psycho. Yeah, that's what I'm what I'm doing. And it appears to be working fine. Doesn't really have any of the weird behaviors and stuff like that I've seen on other systems. And I'll tell you exactly why I did it. Primarily because I couldn't get the latest version of Minecraft to run on Fedora. I was like, why is this not working? And I ran it on another system and it was fine. And I ran on another system and it was fine. I'm like, what is it with my particular Fedora desktop that is not allowing me to run 26.1? Because I've been holding up the upgrade of our Minecraft servers because I couldn't run it locally as a client. And I found out, it's like, yeah, it literally is because I was using the AMD driver in the kernel and stuff like that from even my discrete graphics. It basically hit a wall and I needed to have the better one. So, yeah. And I'm like, well, I wanted to update this system anyway. So, So it went bye-bye. I'm very happy actually. So I had more than enough reason to switch over. And everything is working fine, including the new version of Minecraft. So eventually we will upgrade our Linux in the Ham Shack, Minecraft server and the Blue Cows Minecraft server, And if you're interested in playing on those, please let us know, because they are whitelisted. So I have to have your basically username in order to get you to on the servers. We're mainly playing on the Blue Cows one right now. But it'd be nice to see some more people on there. So if you're interested, just let us know and we'll get you access to that stuff. Other things that have been going on. Yeah, just like I said, lots of meetings and theater stuff. So I was just on a meeting with the with all the Jamboree staff to finalize some other deliverables that have to be given out this month on when are people arriving and everything else from my staff. So yeah, it's crazy stuff. So enough of our exciting lives, and let's get on to our amateur radio topics. And I guess I'll just go first. Okay. Yeah, Cushcraft and High Gain are sold. How about that? The Linton News is reporting that the ITU Corporation has acquired the Cushcraft and High Gain brands from MFJ Enterprises. ITU will move manufacturing from Mississippi to a recently purchased facility in Linton, Indiana. And we'll bring 50 new jobs to the area. So we're going to have a bunch of new antenna builders over there in Indiana. And this is kind of good news. Obviously, MFJ is slowly kind of closing with Martin retiring and everything else. So this is great news. And this came from Linton News. And I've heard this in many places. This kind of got blasted all over the internet of people either complaining or not complaining about those brands. But I remember when Cushcraft and High Gain got sold to MFJ and everybody was complaining. They're like, oh, well, there's going to be crud antennas and stuff like that. But I think MFJ was a nice care holder of those two brands. And I didn't see much in the realities of people thinking that it was going to be MFJified garbage. So yeah, it's good to see that these brands are continuing their life with another company.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, actually, I think Linton is a suburb of Indianapolis. But I'm not positive, but maybe they'll, somebody will show up from there and run over to Dayton or something. So who knows? But
it's quite a ways outside of Indianapolis.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Oh, yeah. Indiana's a suburb of Indiana. Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know how far it looks like about 30 or 40 miles outside of Indianapolis proper.
Okay. I drive 30 or 40 miles to the grocery store. Yeah.
Well, we can't count that.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Whatever. Yeah. So our next story is Open Hamclock Backend is now fully independent of the original source. And the following is a message from Open Hamclock Backend contributor Chris Smith, G1FEF, with light editing good grief, by K4HCK. And they went on to say that Open Hamclock Backend is now fully independent of the original source and does not proxy any data from the ClearSky Institute server. When the original backend server goes offline in June, anyone using OHB will find their Hamclock will continue to work. We've also made some improvements over the original, especially in the terms of CPU and memory use. It is now more efficient, so anyone hosting it on their own hardware will see instant improvements. We have two more items of exciting news to share. Number one, we now have a publicly available OHB server, which anyone using Hamclock is welcome to use. Just point your Hamclock to ohb.hamclock.app 80. And port 80. And this server is dedicated hardware hosted in a commercial data center and is free for all Hamclock users to enjoy. They also have a website where you can keep track of the latest releases, find instructions on how to use OHB, see who's behind the initiative, as well as how to contact them to provide feedback and ask for assistance. And this came from OHB Works.
Ooh, fancy. Got their own site. Fancy.
Yeah.
Track news and everything else like that. Well, the next story comes for us from the ARDC, and they provided news that they are hiring. The ARDC seeks a mid to senior level software developer to work with our staff on a contract basis. The role will support an ongoing development of our 44Net program services and potentially other related free software projects. An ideal candidate will be active in free and open technology communities, particularly those related to amateur radio, digital communication science, FOSS development, and DIY culture. And then the other position they have is a technical writer, and that one is to work with our staff on a contract basis as well. So these are both contract positions. The role will support ongoing development of our 40 and our technical publishing activities. An ideal candidate will be active in the FOSS community and particularly those related to amateur radio. So yes, so they are hiring. They have actually already reached out to me, and I said I couldn't because it's, you know, obviously purely software development, which would collide with what I do for a living. So I can't moonlight. That's irresponsible and probably a conflict of interest. So, if you are interested, I think the pay range for the software developers is between $50 and $85 an hour.
Nice.
So if you're looking for some extra contract work, they're looking for probably somewhere in the neighborhood of like 20 hours a week. So like this would definitely be part-time, but you know, still it's not bad money. So, if you're interested, go contact the ARDC and why not? And I think
little side gig.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's all we have for amateur radio topics. It was, there was quite a bit of stuff going on, but I didn't really see anything, that interest me. Obviously you put most of these notes in here, so.
I was just occasionally I'd stumble across something and go, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. So.
Yeah. So but, I think we got a lot more in the open source and Linux topic. So let's get started on that. And Cheryl, go ahead and take the first one.
All righty then. So the first one is i486 is out. The Linux kernel is finally dropping i486 support, queued for Linux 7.1. The first patch removes the relevant kconfig build options with a fuller cleanup covering 80 files and over 14,000 lines of legacy code still to follow. But if you have an i486 machine tucked away somewhere, it is not suddenly useless. Older kernel releases will continue to run on the hardware just fine. Yes, those older kernels are not getting security patches, but if you're keeping a decades-old machine around for historical or educational purposes, it will not be your daily driver anyway. So just keep it off the internet, pair it with an older LTS kernel, and it will do what you needed to do without much fuss. And this story came from It's FOSS.
Awesome. And we have another story here from It's FOSS, and it's called Pewter. Pewter. Pewter.
Pewter.
Pewter. Pewter. Pewter. Pewter adds only Office. That's so exciting. Pewter. Pewter. The open source browser-based desktop OS has added only Office to its app marketplace, giving it a full Office suite covering documents, spreadsheets, presentations, and PDF editing. Hey, that's what we do all day. If you are coming across Pewter OS for the first time, you should know that the files you uploaded or created will be available as long as the browser session is not deleted. But if you want to save them for a longer period, you can create an account with Pewter. If you see a good use of Pewter in your workflow, or it could help your team if you have one, you can always self-host it or pay to Pewter for their managed hosting. And this also came from, like I say, It's FOSS. Yeah, and Pewter is just basically a Linux-based system that runs in the browser. Most likely, I'm assuming. I did not do any research on this. This was just brought into the news list here, and it did kind of look interesting. If you're interested in finding out more about Pewter, let us know. Maybe we'll dig into it a little bit more. I just kind of just hit its website, and I see Tucker's linking it in the show notes or in the chat right now too. It looks kind of, I don't know. I wouldn't have a use for it, but you never know. People might be interested in it. Yeah, David puts a meme in here. I hate my Pewter. All of my enemies are inside it. Very good. Awesome. Well, Cheryl, why don't you take the next one?
Okay, the next one is Soul Circuit is short-circuiting. More than a year after launching a crowdfunding campaign for a pair of Raspberry Pi-powered handheld computers, the folks at Soul Circuit have announced a major change. And backers aren't particularly pleased. The Pilot 5 and the Pilot 7 handhelds were originally positioned as handheld computers that would use a credit card-sized Raspberry Pi 5 Model B computer for the brains. But this week, Soul Circuit announced that the version that eventually ships to backers will be designed for a Raspberry Pi Compute Module 5 instead. And while that might make sense from a design perspective, it's not what the backers signed up for. Here's the problem. The Pilot handhelds don't come with a Raspberry Pi. You have to bring your own. So if you backed the project thinking you'd be able to use it with a Raspberry Pi computer that you already have, now Soul Circuit says it'll ship you a handheld designed for use with a completely different computer. And if you don't already have that Raspberry Pi compute module lying around, buying a new one would get expensive. After Raspberry Pi's latest RAM-related price hikes, the top-of-the-line Raspberry Pi CM5 could set you back as much as $330. For its part, Soul Circuit says it's been developing a version of the Pilot based on Compute Module 5 for the past year, in parallel with the Raspberry Pi design, Pi 5 design, and ultimately decided the model was more practical because it allows us to integrate all major components, including display, audio, NVMe, and batter into a single mainboard for better reliability, durability, and easier assembly. All of that may very well be true, but it's also true that nobody who backed the project expected when they pledged money. Some commenters complained that they already purchased a Raspberry Pi 5 specifically for use with the Pilot 5 or 7. Others are asking for their refunds. The move from Raspberry Pi 5-based handheld to one with a custom-printed circuit board designs for the Raspberry Pi CM5 also brings some changes to the port layout. Pictures shared by Soul Circuit appear to show only a single USB Type-A port and no Ethernet port, for example. It's unclear what other changes may have been made. The original plan for the Pilot 5 had been to release a handheld computer with a 5-inch, 1280 by 800 pixel IPS LCD display and integrated keyboard, while the Pilot 7 would have had a 7-inch, 1280 by 800 and a modular design that will allow you to replace the keyboard with a gamepad or other accessories. Both models originally had an estimated ship date of July 2025, so it's been almost a year now, although Soul Circuit said at the time that there was a chance that unforeseen issues could lead to delays. Looks like that wasn't all they led to. And this came from Lil Putin.
Lil Putin. It's a little pooter.
Yeah.
Little pooter. So, you know, when you get on these Kickstarter programs and stuff like that, you know, things do change. Obviously, a lot of them are slightly vaporware at some point. It's nice when they actually get done. And stuff can change. It's always sort of a caveat to these kind of things, and most early backers know this. If you want a product that's finished, then you should wait until it's finished and not support it through the development and shipping process. But that brings us on to our next story, which is Google Drive missing from Ubuntu 26.04. I'm assuming this is the beta because the 26.04 technically has not been released. At least I checked today for it just to make sure. But in case you miss it, people have been checking out the Ubuntu 26.04. I'm assuming beta. As part of the update, users have noticed that the Google Drive implementation has gone missing. I didn't even know there was one. Beforehand, you could attach your Google account to GNOME, and it would let you see your Google Drive files in the File Explorer like it was local. After the update, people began to notice that the Google Drive functionality stopped working. The other parts worked. Ubuntu would still let you access the Google Mail contacts and calendar by signing in through the OS, but the Drive functionality was gone. Oh, I guess this is when you put your social media accounts and stuff like that in at login, and it does all this fancy stuff for you. Let's see. People began wondering why it was missing and began reporting it as a bug. However, as it turns out, not only was this not a bug, but it was something we could have stopped years ago but didn't. So why did it go away? Well, it actually isn't an issue with Ubuntu. It's a problem with GNOME 50. However, before you point fingers at the GNOME developers, hey, why not? There's a very good reason as to why the handy feature went missing. In reply to a bug report based on the Google Drive's disappearance, Emmanuel Bassi of the GNOME team revealed why they removed it. Quote, "It is no longer supported Unfortunately, libg data, which was used to handle integration with some of Google Online Services, has been unmaintained for nearly 4 years. GVFS has disabled the dependency by default 10 months ago, and the GNOME Online accounts checks for that. If people wish to work on restoring this functionality, they need to reach out to the GVFS maintainer. End quote. Yes, you read it correctly. Not only did nobody step up to maintain the Google Drive feature in GNOME, but the team gave people almost 4 years to hop in and keep the code running. As such, the Google team, or the GNOME team, sorry, starts with a G. It's pretty close. A GNOME team was forced to remove the feature entirely. So that's right. So as of GNOME 50, you will not be having, you know, Google Drive integrated in with it. Now, I use Google all the time, but I do not use the integration of the Google Drive virtual file system. So, yeah, so be aware of that, and we're still waiting. I think it is set to release sometime this upcoming week, and we may or may not have a customized distro for it. For Hamvention, we'll see. I'm still kind of plotting all that stuff together for that project. So, any comments on that? This came from OMG Ubuntu.
I have none. So,
okay. Well, that brings us to. Oh, go ahead.
Oh well, no. It's kind of sad that nobody was able to actually get their crap together and do something. But
it's been 4 years. It's
dead. Well, yeah, it's dead. But why is it dead?
Well, somebody's really gonna vibe code it, so it'll be out sometime next week.
I'm sure. So,
Grok. Please write me a Grok.
Yeah. So we're moving on to Linux and the Ham Shack stuff, and our first story is Linux Ham Radio KISS serial driver being modernized in 2026. And this was written by Michael Larabelle in Free Software on the 29th of March at 10:52 a.m. So there's five comments to it, and one of them was, here's something that wasn't on my bingo card for this year of the MKIS driver for ham radio being modernized in 2026, as opposed to it just being dropped. The MKIS code hasn't seen much driver activity since the original Git import of the Linux kernel more than 20 years ago. Posted to the Linux kernel mailing list this Sunday, I believe that was probably last Sunday, by open source developer Mashiro Chen, is modernizing and cleaning up the MKIS radio driver, ham radio driver, excuse me. This is a serial port KISS protocol driver for exchanging data between a computer and terminal node computer for AX.25 amateur radio, quote-unquote, ham radio connections. The MKIS driver has been around since before the Linux kernel Git import, and in the 21 years since it was an SMP rewrite in 2025, and some minor fixes, but that's been about it. Even for some minor code maintenance on MKIS has been more than 6 years ago. Mashiro Chen explained the 2026 modernization of the driver. Wow, I can't even talk tonight.
I just want to say this was your story.
Yeah, I know. Again, it was one of the things I saw. I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting, and literally just threw it in and didn't get around to cleaning it up. So the patch series modernizes the MKIS driver, which is used for AX.25 communication over serial lines. Funny, didn't we discuss serial lines or serial stuff lately?
We talked like about maybe serial last all the time. Week?
I know, but funny, you know, nobody ever needs serial stuff. Anyway, the series starts by moving variable assignments out of, you know, if conditions to improve code safety and readability. The second patch removes redundant static initializations to zero. The third patch fixes missing spaces around assignment operations. The fourth patch modernizes the logging system by replacing legacy printk calls with netdev and PR macros for better device-specific content. The fifth patch addresses remaining checkpatch.pl issues, primarily converting space-based indentation to tabs, aligning parameters, and fixing comment formats. The patches are out for review on the Linux kernel mailing list, and this came from Pharonix.
And for those of you that are completely lost, the AX25 is basically used for packet. It's the data link layer for for packet radio. So think about APRS and stuff like that that uses a packet. So it's still relevant to this day, but you know, hey, it is what it is. It's kind of interesting that it's getting updated after all these years. I mean, obviously, there's probably not much to change except for just ensuring that. Well, hey, let's just throw the Rust at it. Let's do what we're doing to everything else in the 7.x kernel and Linux is Rustify it. So, but I don't think they actually converted it to Rust yet. So. We'll see. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that it had been so long since anybody had, you know, done anything with it. So
if it ain't broke, you don't fix it.
Well, that's true. So
yeah, plus it's such a small amount of people probably using it. So
possibly.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, the last story we have here is that this kind of sort of came out this week is the WSJTX 3.0.0 is out. That's right. They have their own release out. I know we've been talking about WSJTX Improve and JTDX and Decodium and everything else in the past few episodes. But no, this is the official release of WSJTX 3.0.0, and it introduces a number of features, new features and capabilities, many of which were already familiar to users of the RC1 that was out for quite a while. Some of those are single-click band buttons enabled from the view menu, the FT8 decoding option for parallel processing concurrent threads, and other changes that yield improved decoding and decoding speed and performance. Optional filters to suppress display of various categories of decoded messages. Options to wait and reply, wait and call, and wait and pounce. Now, what you'll note is that a lot of these features have kind of already been in some of the other alternate versions of WSJTX, like WSJTX Improved. And I believe that was that's sort of like some of these features are being finally taken into the main line of the application. And including, I don't even think they have it listed here, but... I noticed when I deleted my configuration for all the WSJTX, because I just loaded this on my computer, that they have fixed finally the dark mode, so it doesn't look like crap, and it doesn't preload a font that sucks. So two things that they've actually fixed in this version, which I'm finally happy to see, that it sort of works in dark mode out of the box. So they should probably put it on here that dark mode no longer sucks. Let's see here. Audible alerts play a sound alerting you of reception of message with specified content. Transmitted power and SWR can be displayed and reported by the radio in a status bar level. Band hopping checkboxes for FT8, FT4, and MSK144 can activate sequential reception intervals on the main subbands, or onto up to 8 specified dial frequencies. So that's kind of interesting. You can do a little band hopping with the application now. So that's pretty awesome. Let's see. Highlight orange, blue features. Yeah, so there's some extra additional highlight options. There's new EME features and also a new echo mode that allows you to transmit your call sign or any other 6-character group to the moon and decode its echo. So if you want to test your ability to do EME, there's a new echo mode to do that. And it looks like QMAP and MAP65 offer spotting to the CQ Live and PSK Reporter websites. I haven't checked out the CQ Live. I'll have to check that out. Plus a lot more. So check out the release notes. We do have it linked in the show notes. And yeah, who knows? We might be talking about WSJTX 3.0.0 in the near future. It all depends on if you tell us to do that. So that's all I have for that. I believe we're on to announcements and feedback.
Yeah, and they keep growing. I keep thinking of stuff every week. So, so I'll tackle this. So for our announcements and feedback, number one, we need help supporting the show. You can do that by using Patreon, PayPal, buy some merch. Just a few bucks a month helps us out immensely when it keeps the lights on. You know, so, and Bill would probably like a little bit of help running all the servers and stuff. We've got everything running on. So we need topics, weekender episodes, anything goes, deep dive episodes. You know, what do you want to hear about? You know, tell us about, you know, a Linux thing, a ham radio thing. Give us some hints. We've had several topic suggestions come in over the last couple of weeks, and we are very appreciative of those, but we can always use more. So please keep sending stuff our way. Come see us at Hamvention, May 15th through the 17th, booth 2206. We're going to be at the Greene County Fairgrounds in Xenia, Ohio. We're in the E2 building, which is called Tesla Hall. We are directly across the aisle from Flex Radio, and Bengali Keys is off to the side, catty corner across from us. We're on the big walkway between the two garage doors, so it stays nice and cool there. And like last year, we had some gale force winds rolling through there at times. So we'll be there from 9 to 5 on Friday and Saturday. And since we both have long drives ahead of us to get home, we'll probably be there at 9 a.m. on Sunday and leave by probably 11-ish. It takes us a couple hours to pack up. So if you're going to come see us on Sunday, make sure you get there early or we might be gone. So you can join us for dinner at Hamvention, although I haven't talked to Bill about this yet, but I don't see him balking at my choices. BJ's Brewhouse has pizza, pasta, burger, steaks, etc. And they have gluten-free and vegetarian options. So it looks like everybody would probably be covered. They've got dairy-free, too. So looks like anybody could find something on their menu to have for dinner. And then Chewy's Tex-Mex is, you know, Saturday night, probably. And Bill and I both like Mexican food, so this kind of seemed like a no-brainer. But, and again, they've got gluten-free and vegetarian, and you could probably have cheese left off in order to go dairy-free. But, yeah, so think about joining us. Let us know so that way we can make sure that there's enough room for us. We've got a repeater for sale. Russ's repeater that he had set up before he passed away has been taken offline, and it needs to find a new home. So I'm bringing it to Hamvention unless somebody speaks up before then. And if nobody buys it at Hamvention, then you can either pick it up in Missouri or pick it up in Billings, Montana, or meet up with Bill in July. I'll send it home with him, and he can meet up with somebody between his house and Boy Scout camp. So just speak up if you're interested in getting more information about it or whatever. And the last thing is the memorial service for Russ, which will be November 1st at our home in Mount Vernon, Missouri. Everybody's welcome. So if you want more information on that or on anything, just fire off an email to info@lhspodcast.info, and we'll get you the info that you're wanting.
Awesome. And those sound like great choices for food because, you know, we got to eat. So.
Well, yeah. And you love pizza. I know that. So,
yeah.
Oh, and BJ's also has a lot of beer.
Oh, well, hearing that it's a brew house, I mean, that's sort of.
Yeah.
I would assume so. Yeah. So,
yeah. They've got a chocolate porter, which I can't drink beer because of the gluten in it. But I was like, oh, that kind of sounds tasty. So.
Yeah. I think it's a chain, isn't it? I think it's a big chain.
It is a chain. Yeah. And Chewy's used to be a chain only in Texas, but apparently it's been bought by Darden, which also owns Olive Garden.
Olive Garden stuff.
Yeah. I was like, all right. But yeah, when Chewy's was just a Texas thing, I loved eating at Chewy's. So.
And these places are right next door to each other. So
it's just, and they're next door to each other in like a block from our hotel.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's why it's convenient for us people. That's sort of how it's working out for you.
Yeah.
So we'll be there no matter what. And if you want to come join us, please let us know. And
yeah, please stop by.
We'll let them know that, like, how many people are coming. So, yeah, we can reserve appropriately. But at minimum, we're probably already there.
Yeah.
So if you want to just do a pop by, say hi, whatever, drop some, drinks on the table or whatever. It's all set. All right, let's get back to feedback here. So we have one email from Bob K4RFK, and he says, how about you revisit setting up TLF and or YFK test and include on how to set up contests that aren't included in the initial downloads? I've looked at their instructions and can't make head nor tails of them. And this is a common thing I've heard with contest software. The more people that use them, a lot of times you can get those configurations out there and you can learn from other people's work. I personally haven't used TLF or YFK test, but I know we have lots of people that do. So I will dig into that, and I think we can do. I think we'll just do a contesting software roundup, probably in one of our deep dives, where we'll do TLF, YFK test, N1MM, not N1MM, not M1, not 1MM. Yeah, that's the right one. Not 1MM. Yeah, I got Mike here listening to the podcast, and I'm already screwing it up already. Jeez. Not 1MM. And yeah, anything else out there, I guess, you know, sometimes you can just use, you know, WSJTX if you're just doing the, you know, the FT8 contest and stuff like that. A lot of people just never leave that interface, and it just logs to, you know, not 1MM in the background or your logger, and then you generate the Cabrilla later on. So, yeah, there's a lot of options for doing contesting, and it does really depend on the contest and how crazy the contest is. Like, we have the 7QP coming up, which is like, you know, there's seven states or whatever, or several states, all the entire seven areas doing it. And then there's also like the New England QSO party, which is at the same time, which has several states. So those are kind of complex contests to do scoring and tracking and stuff like that. And I don't know what the coverage on TLF and YFK test are as on those. So it might be a good time to kind of talk about those with some of those more complicated scoring contests coming up. So I'll take that into notes here and decide what we want to do for our deep dive coming up here shortly. But we do have subscribers and supporters, and I'll go through the list here since I'm still chatty. We had no new Patreons or PayPal or free Patreons this particular week, but I do appreciate your continued support through those networks, and it definitely helps out paying for everything that we have to cover here. Facebook, we had Jim Mooney and SCHM Sultana. I don't know what SCHM is abbreviated for.
I was going to go with Shim.
Shim. Shwam? Shwammy? Yeah, I don't know. Something like that. Nobody on Instagram or X. Over on Mastodon, we had Corey B join us. And on Discord, which I totally forgot, I was talking to Christian was it yesterday, the day before yesterday. And I'm like, oh, I haven't even listed all the people that joined Discord. So these are all the people that joined in the month of March. And we just had somebody just join. We had a few join just as we're recording this podcast here. So I don't know, like, what happened here. And I'll just go ahead and add them in here since they're also popped into the live chat here for a few moments. Let's see. I'm going to type it real quick, and this will be all deleted in post. No, actually, this will just go out like it is on the podcast. So we had Greg, NM8B, Conover, and we had Keith, K2UNI. We had Macrador. And I will say, if you have weird symbols as your username, I just look at the actual account name. So if it's not what you expect, sorry. AB4WS Jack joined us. Primitive with a 1 and a 3 in the leet speak at the end of the name there. Deleted user. is one voice. That's another unique one. Russell McKay too. Brian, AK6MA, Jeff, KD8VAX, and then tonight we actually had Noah join us, and Jack, KM7CIB, joined the Discord server. And then for our live show participants, we had a lot of activity of people coming and going and everything else. So we had Mike, K6GTE, Tucker, KJ5NIT, David, W4DPE, Don, KC9ZMY, Dan, KB6NU was in here for a short bit, and Don, KB2YSI. And then we had Noah pop in until somebody scared him away. And then Jack also came in here. KM7CIB, which I see he's gone too. So they came in as a pair and left as a pair, I guess, sort of how it is. And I think that's all we have. I'm just kind of looking through the chat room here. Did you see anything, Cheryl, that we needed to?
No, because apparently when I click on the chat room, that's what causes me to kind of blip out of Discord.
Oh, no.
So I went, okay, I'm not going to do that again.
Not clicking the chat room. Okay, so I'm looking here. I see David just saying that WSJTX have 8 different versions floating. Oh boy. Versions floating out there is one of the worst things about it. Hopefully them integrating these features will encourage people to contribute to the main program instead of doing their whole own flavor. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I had mentioned in the past that WSJTX team has been slightly hesitant to cooperating at times with other people that have different ideas of how the software should work. It is nice that they're at least open to one of the groups. Obviously, there's still JTDX, which is sort of out there on their own. I mean, that's my particular version that I like using, although I just got rid of it on my test system, well, my amateur radio system here, so I can test out WSJTX without having all the pollution from the other versions sitting around. And then, of course, we have the Decodium version for the FT2, which, we have since found out that is slightly problematic. Let's see what else here. How to implement Pooter for amateur radio use. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, technically, a web browser-based thing can use connected USB devices, so you can write software against that. I don't think I would be covering that, though. Is there a way to set up Ham Clock so it's a locally hosted website? That would be a good topic for a future show, since we started with Pooter. Yeah. There's another version of a Open Ham Clock or whatever that we did cover in previous versions or previous releases of the podcast here. Check that out. I'm pretty sure it was in one of the last two podcasts. I talked about the one I ran locally, and you can run that locally, and it does everything itself. So it's completely different than Open Ham Clock. But it's called like Open Ham Clock or something stupid like that. but you run it as a node service locally, and you can host it locally, and then you can do whatever you want with it. No blood, blah, blah, read WSGTX. A mainstream and hot-routed version would be fine. Too much fragmentation is no bueno. Yeah, I agree. It kind of gets a little wild with the versions. There's definitely some of the features of the JTDX that I particularly like. I like the way it handles multiple people calling you and queuing system and you know, how your interaction has to be kind of limited and continue the thing operating in full blast. So, like, you literally just have to hit the OK button when you're logging, and it still just keeps on going, you know, transmitting and stuff like that. So, and the timeout specifications for walking away from a contact is really cool how that works. And I haven't looked at this new version of WSJTX 3.0 to see if they've implemented any of that stuff. Cause I don't know. I wasn't using WSJTX improved. So I don't know if it had some of those extra features in it to handle kind of like, you know, when someone calls you and they're really low and you try to reply back, like how long you allow that to occur before you just switch back to CQ. And I don't recall that being a setting, but I will dig into that and find out. And that'd be kind of cool to see if I can go down to one version and not have to use JTDX, which is slightly outdated at this point. I don't think they've updated it to the 3.0 code base, because there might be some collisions in some of the features and stuff like that. So cool. I think that wraps up everything in the chat room. I think we might be able to get out of here, Cheryl.
Ooh, all righty then. Well, if that's the case, that brings us down to the end of our show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you in 1 week with our deep dive episode, and hopefully Bill picks a good topic. I think he's got several on his plate right now he's going to have to debate about. So this has been episode 613 of Linux in the Ham Shack. For Russ, K52X, I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1-909-547-7469. That's 1-909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.